Welcome to the Issue Is Podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, the co-author of the number one selling book in America, Original Sin, which has been the most newsworthy and buzzy political book in years, that has really dominated much of the nation's political discourse, certainly dominated Washington, with its focus on President Biden's decline. What was really going on behind the scenes, who was really running the country, why Democrats didn't say anything, where the Democratic Party goes from here, why the media didn't say anything, what was going on with his doctor. The book's really interesting. It's controversial. The Bidens have pushed back on it hard. Some folks in the right-wing space have certainly pushed back on Jake Tapper, saying, why didn't you say more at the time? We don't want to give you money. It's gotten some also really good reviews. The New York Times, the LA Times, Washington Post, book reviews, all were really strong for the book. And I'll say when I read it, I was really interested in what it said, regardless of what you think about Jake Tapper or the rest of it. So this week we have with us Alex Thompson, who was widely praised by some now for his brave coverage of Biden aging issue at the time when a lot of folks in the mainstream media were ignoring that issue and wouldn't report on it. And he broke a lot of news at that time. Jake Tapper asked him to be a part of this book. Alex is somebody I've known for years and somebody who's been a frequent guest on this show over the years, but this is sort of the biggest moment of his career. So we catch up with Alex and we have him for the entire show. And I wish we could have gone even longer because there's so much to get into here. But we start with some sound from our show, from Dean Phillips. Listen to how sort of prescient he was.
I respect the president. I campaign for him. I pass his legislation. I admire him. He was probably the only Democrat that could win in 2020. He is probably one of the only ones that will lose in 2024. That's what the data says. His decline is real. And the more he's encapsulated and kept from the public, the more people are going to realize they'd rather side with a strong man who lacks character and competency than a man in decline. And that's the problem right now.
That was then Democratic Congressman Dean Phillips on our show in February 2024. He was largely mocked by his party, ignored by the mainstream media, and finished in the single digits in the Democratic primary.
He often talked about being a transitional president in the context of a campaign.
That was Alex Thompson with us back in 2021. For years, he was one of the few mainstream journalists bringing up a lot of the issues Phillips talked about, and was sometimes shunned by his colleagues because of it. Well, he's written a book about it with Jake Tapper. You may have heard of it. It's called Original Sin, President Biden's Decline, Its Cover-Up, and His Disastrous Choice to Run Again. This week, Original Sin debuted at number one on the New York Times bestseller list. Alex Thompson, welcome back to The Issue Is, and congratulations on number one.
Thank you, sir. And man, that showing that COVID haircut and beard was really cruel, but thank you for highlighting
well,
it's
how far you've come and the journey and describe how this moment feels, what being number one means to you.
I don't know, it's a dream come true, right? I mean, every reporter, every writer always dreams of being a New York Times bestseller, especially New York Times number one bestseller. Just I don't know, I feel very grateful for all the people that read, all the sources that talked to me, and also, you know, all the people that highlighted my work, which very much includes you, Alex.
Ah, thank you very much. All right. Well, the book is great, and there's been so much written about it, including by a lot of people who I don't think read it, but seem to want to make it all about the authors or other issues and all the rest of it. But let's talk about what's actually in the book, which it is surprising, as you said. But let's start with the title, just so people know what we're talking about. What is The Original Sin?
Original Sin is Joe Biden running for re-election at the age of 80. Someone that had obviously had two brain surgeries in the past. And what's sort of shocking about this decision is how little process there was. And it was, you know, very reckless to do so at his age. And a lot of Democrats we talked to, including people that still love Joe Biden and think very highly of him and his career public service, believe that it was the most significant cause for Donald Trump's ability to come back to the Oval Office.
The other word that a lot of people seem to focus on in terms of the cover is the word cover up. which is kind of a loaded word. And frankly, honestly, when I went into reading this book, I thought that seems a bit much. And leaving it, I felt that is a very accurate word. And it seems like it applies in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and I think some people associate the word with criminality. That's not what we're alleging here. But what we are alleging is that the Joe Biden that people saw on that debate stage, that had happened. He had acted that way before that night. It was not just a bad night. It was not just the cold. It was not just about over preparation or under preparation. He had been acting that way. People had seen him act that way. And there was a concerted effort behind the scenes by this White House to try to prevent the public, other members of the Democratic Party, other members of the cabinet, other senior White House officials from seeing that Joe Biden. If it was not being covered up, it would not have been such a shock to so many Democrats, to so many voters. And that's why we call it a cover up.
And so you also name names in terms of who was doing this cover up. And there are a lot of the same folks that were running the country, right? I mean, who, because that's one of the key questions a lot of people have is, who's running the country during all this?
You know, one key Democrat is essentially described that Joe Biden was a senior member of the board of five people running the country. So these people would be Mike Donilon, Steve Ricchetti, Bruce Reed, at times Ron Klain, and then just sort of outside of them, you know, Jill Biden's longtime chief of staff and sort of his deputy on the president's side, Annie Tomasini. These were the most powerful people in the country the last 4 years.
And these are people that have been longtime advisors to him. And what, to me, the cover-up that was most damning and most surprising was the way that they covered up information from getting to him.
Absolutely. They weren't just keeping Joe Biden from the world. They were keeping the world from Joe Biden. And that included his polling numbers, the way that the country was feeling, the tremendous anger that was continuing to bubble up. Joe Biden just did not seem to recognize a lot of that. And, you know, a lot of this is in some ways sort of the dark side of loyalty, that they loved him so much, they were so loyal to him, that in some ways they were protecting him.
And one of the most memorable quotes in the book to me comes from David Plouffe, longtime advisor to Barack Obama and then Kamala Harris. And he says, quote, "One of the great lessons from 2024, never again can we as a party suggest to people that what they're seeing is not true." Which reminded me of so many interviews that both of us have done, including this one with California's U.S. Senator Alex Padilla here on The Issue Is in February of last year.
There's a situation right now where 86% of the country believes that Joe Biden is too old to run for president. 86% of the country doesn't agree on almost anything. Why are they wrong?
Look, maybe it's because they don't see the Joe Biden that I see. He's up there in age. That's a number.
We were constantly told how great he was behind the scenes. You know, just see him in the meetings. But your reporting suggests it was actually worse behind the scenes. And what to me was especially concerning was some national security situations where it wasn't just about running for president, it was about being the president.
Yeah, I mean, we had multiple members of the cabinet that said that they had the proverbial 2 a.m. crisis phone call in the middle of the night. They didn't have confidence by 2024 that Joe Biden would be able to handle it. And I think you're so right to highlight that past interview, because one of the stories of this book is basically how the Democratic Party and Democratic elites ignored their own voters, who were speaking very loudly and very clearly. And also some of these Democratic elites had seen Joe Biden behind the scenes, had seen moments that truly concerned them, and no one said anything. And, you know, Democrats rightfully mock a lot of Republicans for saying one thing about Donald Trump in private and then going out publicly and, you know, sort of doing a dear leader salute. You know, they did absolutely the exact same thing the last 4 years, especially the last 2 years of Joe Biden's presidency.
And why do you think they did that?
For their own self-interest and preservation. And, you know, they don't get points for bravery for trying to push Joe Biden out after the debate. The reason they did that was because they no longer believed he could win. And so they pushed him aside. But, you know, they didn't want to end up like Dean Phillips did, who I commend you for having on his show. But Dean Phillips is no longer in Congress. None of them wanted to be in that situation, even though I think if you put them all on truth serum, none of them actually believe that Joe Biden should be president in January of 2029, which is what he was running to do.
At 86 years old. So you talk about that debate, and then after the debate, there's a bit of an intervention, and you actually talked about it with us from the RNC. Take a look.
Biden is backed into a corner, but he is isolated. Well, because he has COVID-19 now, but also from the rest of the party. It is very unclear. While Nancy Pelosi was able to meet with him, Hakeem Jeffries was able to meet with him, Chuck Schumer drove over 3 hours to meet with him in Rehoboth, Delaware, to convey these messages.
So in the book, you lay out what happened during that Schumer meeting. This is at Biden's house. He was recovering from COVID. Schumer talks about the fact that Biden's pollsters were not allowed to talk to him. All the information went through Biden's longtime aide, Mike Donilon. To me, this was the most shocking passage of the whole book. Schumer asks, quote, "Have you talked to your pollsters?" "No," Biden said. Schumer says, "Mr. President, your chances of winning are only 5%. I've talked to your pollsters." "Really?" Biden said. Schumer, "They're not telling you. The analytics guy, who probably knows the best, said it's 1%. Schumer, if I were you, I wouldn't run. I'm urging you not to run. Biden, do you think Kamala could win? Schumer, I don't know if she can win. I just know that you cannot." What a moment.
It's extraordinary. And, you know, while a lot of focus was on Nancy Pelosi, Schumer was really the only person that got in Joe Biden's face and said, "I don't think you can do this." And another moment that was clear from that meeting was, you know, Mike Donilon and Steve Ricchetti had been in another meeting with all the members, Democratic members of the Senate, and it was very clear the overwhelming majority did not think Joe Biden should be the nominee anymore. And Joe Biden didn't appear to know about that either. And so this is a moment where Schumer realizes that Joe Biden is not up to date on all the necessary information that his senior advisors should have been giving him. And it's also a moment where Joe Biden realizes that the members of the Senate, that the body he'd been part of for 36 years of his life, no longer think he's up to this.
Did Schumer sit down with you? I mean, how did you get those quotes? How did you get us inside that room?
Well, as you know, most of our quotes are anonymous, but we feel incredibly confident of our reporting.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. And to literally see it laid out like that. And we know you worked with Jake Tapper of CNN on this. How did that partnership come to be?
You know, it was Jake's idea. It actually started the day before the election. He just happened to be, have me on set that day. And, you know, we were friendly, but we weren't like, "Let's write a book together, friends." And he said, "You know, I think she might lose. You know, I've been having this idea for a book about how the Democratic Party let Trump return. Would you be interested?" And I sort of, you know, I said noncommittally, said, "Yes, I'm interested." And then the day after the election, he sent me a draft of a book proposal, and we were off to the races. And finally, a lot of Democrats that have been reluctant to talk to us, we talked to over 200 of them, finally started chatting. And some that had talked to us before finally started being more candid.
How do you guys divide the workload? How does that work with two people?
Well, Jake set a very aggressive deadline of the first draft being due January 31st. So we basically, you know, a deadline sort of sharpens the focus. And we basically made a list of, you know, 100, 200 people, and we just divided them up.
Mm. You have been honored for your reporting on this, including by your colleagues.
Being truth tellers also means telling the truth about ourselves. We, myself included, missed a lot of this story. And some people trust us less because of it. We bear some responsibility for faith in the media being at such lows.
That is Axios' Alex Thompson speaking to the White House Correspondents Association when they honored him for his reporting on President Biden's decline. That reporting found in the original new book, Original Sin. Alex, what is your biggest lesson for the media in terms of what was missed and what can be done now?
I think it's just a good reminder that every single president, every single White House, no matter the party, they all lie. And you just have to remain skeptical, even with people that claim to have, you know, selfless and earnest motives. I also think sometimes when you're in a reporting circle, sometimes you know, a groupthink can sort of take hold and a clubbiness can take hold, and you don't feel comfortable necessarily isolating yourself from your peers, even if sources are telling you something and your eyes are telling you something. And I think always the key is, you know, like, gut check yourself, but, you know, trust your instincts and don't, so I guess that's what I would say.
Do you think by nature there's a lot of reporters that are more progressive and don't like Donald Trump and were concerned about potentially helping him or feeding into what they see as right-wing propaganda, and so they were afraid to bring up these issues for that reason?
I think some of them, yeah. And I'm not the only one that feels that way. Former editor-in-chief of the New York Times, Jill Abramson, said that as much last year after the debate. I do think that some reporters let their own personal ideological leanings influence their reporting.
Why do you think you were able to not do that as much, to go up against it? What was your thought process?
I don't know. I very much see that politics can be sort of a cult-like atmosphere. I've always been fairly comfortable. And I feel sort of, the reason I'm stumbling over this, because it feels sort of self-aggrandizing to say, but I guess I've always just been very comfortable sort of, if I believe something, then just sort of standing on that and being on my own.
One of the things that you guys argue for in the book is this need for there to potentially be changes in the way that White House doctors report to the public. Because even though this is called a cover-up, legally, it wasn't, right? I mean, everything they did was fine. The White House doctor doesn't have to tell anything about the president's health.
Yeah, there's no mechanism to make a president be candid about what medications they're on, what diseases they've been screened for, nothing. I mean, everything's based on the trust system. And part of the reason we were interested in this book is because Joe Biden, you know, this is a consequential instance of not being candid about your health, but it is by no means the first. George Washington was not candid about his health. Woodrow Wilson, FDR, JFK, Ronald Reagan. This has happened before. It will happen again unless there is some sort of mechanism to force transparency. So one of the ideas that we quote an expert having is basically requiring the White House physician to submit a report to Congress under penalty of perjury. Just one idea, but this has happened before. It will happen again.
Who do you think's the biggest winner of this book? There's a lot of losers, but to me, some of the biggest winners are not only you, but also a lot of right-wing pundits, honestly, looking pretty good in this. Dean Phillips, who ran against President Biden, looking pretty good. But I think the biggest winner may be Bob Herr, who was the independent prosecutor who was really disparaged by all of the Democrats for stuff that he didn't actually do.
I completely agree with you. I mean, Robert Herr, not only was he disparaged by Democrats, he couldn't even find a job for several months. The White House essentially went to war with him to try to disparage him and make him into a right-wing pack. Ironically, he's actually representing Harvard University now against the Trump administration. But this was a classic example of a guy that looked at what he saw. And I think if you listen to the tapes of the conversation with my Axios colleague, Mark Caputo, released just a few weeks ago, it is sort of shocking that the man on those tapes was president of the United States.
And they said, Biden said at the time that Herr brought up this idea of Beau Biden, and he actually didn't. Joe Biden brought that up in this random sort of long-winded thing, and Herr chose not at the time to fight back, but now we're learning his side of the story. We are talking to Alex Thompson, co-author of the number one book in America, Original Sin. Alex, we spoke to you years ago when you were reporting a book on the Bidens that Simon & Schuster chose not to publish. How did getting to know the Bidens that way, kind of intimately, compare to what you learned doing this book?
Yeah, I mean, the books are completely different. That book was supposed to, you know, be published before the election, but certainly a lot of the themes of that original book, which I sort of saw as, you know, a family tragedy grafted onto a presidency, the death of Beau Biden, Hunter's travails, and, you know, self destruction, which then became sort of a plea for or a bid for redemption, I thought were just such a key part of how Biden acted and saw the world. You know, some presidents keep their families at bay, but in this case, like the real inner circle, the real Politburo in some ways was the family. And so, you know, reporting on the Bidens in that intimate way certainly influenced some of the themes of this book and the aftermath of the election.
And we'll just, as we wrap things up, just want to talk about you real quickly. You know, we've talked about on the show before that we had the same high school teacher who doubted our writing skills at Agora High School. The book publisher doubted you. Fellow reporters doubted you, your reports on Biden's age. After all of that, how do you process this moment of having the best-selling book in the country? And is there a little bit of I told you so?
Victory is the best revenge. I don't have to say I told you so.
Are people apologizing to you now? And what has been some of the reaction to the book, or surprising reaction to the book?
I'd say there are some people that are saying I was rooting for you all along. But in fairness, you know, the people that I really respected, the people that I really cared what their opinion was, whether or not it was family, but also some colleagues who I really, really trust. And also like my bosses at Axios, they had my back the entire way. They knew that I wasn't some sort of, you know, closet hack, that I wouldn't have reported something unless I really believed it and I had the sources to back it up. So, you know, the people that I always really cared what their opinion was, they were with me the entire way. And they've been so great. And I feel sort of in some ways it's a joint victory.
Love that. As we wrap things up, we know you know that we like to have fun on this show. You've even shown us your dance moves in the past.
Such as they are.
I don't know if we've got that. We'll add that in. You told us that the Red Hot Chili Peppers were your favorite band in our personal issues segment. So are you ready to play another round of personal issues?
Hit me.
Okay, these are the some of your recent favorites. So we're going to put 30 seconds up on the clock. What is the best TV show that you've binged lately?
The Studio with Seth Rogen.
Best book you've read other than your own?
Martyr.
Favorite movie you've seen?
Mission Impossible.
All-time favorite sports team?
Lakers.
Favorite interview on the press tour other than this one?
I enjoyed the free press with Barry Weiss.
And for you, Alex, as we wrap things up, sort of your biggest takeaway from this whole experience, this crazy whirlwind you've been on, doing 1,000 different interviews, traveling the country, sort of what's going through your mind right now?
Life is good. I feel lucky.
That's very concise. I appreciate that. Alex Thompson, congratulations. Those of us from Agora Hills are especially proud of you. The book is fantastic. We encourage everybody to read it. Read it for yourself. Make up your own mind. Then you can have an opinion on it. It's annoying if you have an opinion, but you haven't actually read the book, much like watching the show. Watch the show and then give your own opinion. Congratulations, Alex, again. Thanks so much for being here for The Issue Is.
Thank you, Alex.
Our thanks to Alex Thompson. Our thanks to you for listening to The Issue Is. Next week, I am headed to Austria, to the Schwarzenegger Climate Initiative's Austrian World Summit. The former governor has asked me to speak there. We're going to be interviewing him. We're putting together a whole half-hour special from there. So we actually won't have a new episode next week because I'll be out of the country working on that. We'll have that episode in 2 weeks. Next week, a repeat of our episode with Jamie Dimon, which if you don't want to wait, you can listen to in podcast form right now. But thank you so much to everybody for listening this week. A reminder to send me a message in social media. I love hearing from you. And love it if you review or send nice notes about our work here, because that's the only way we can get people to know what we're doing. Thanks again. See you next time for more of The Issue Is.